From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Do you think the movie would have been released if we hadn't run our story?
That is a great question. I think, yes, I think the movie would have been released.
In August, following back-to-back mass shootings, a colleague and I wrote a story in The Hollywood Reporter about ESPN pulling ads for an upcoming movie called The Hunt, a violent satire in which elites kill so-called deplorables for sport. After Fox News picked up that story and Trump tweeted about it, Universal canceled the film's release. So when Damon Lindelof, the film's co-writer, came to the studio recently to talk about his new HBO series Watchmen, I had to ask about The Hunt. In all my years of hosting The Business, we've only done a two-part interview once, recently with Kevin Smith. We weren't planning to do another one anytime soon, but here we are. Damon Lindelof and I have a heart-to-heart about The Hunt. I offer a mea culpa for a missing email, and Lindelof tells us he holds out hope that the film may one day get a release. But first on the news banter, Reed Hastings says aloud what he's really thinking. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, you know, I have talked on the show before about how entertained I am when Netflix, the original streamer, the original disruptor, which was going to come in and everything was going to be the Netflix way, gradually starts seeing that they have to maybe do things a Hollywood way. Gradually starts saying, you know, if you bring us an awards-worthy movie, we absolutely will do what we can to get a theatrical release. We're buying this wonderful theater where we're going to showcase your films in New York and LA, and we care so much about, you know, the artists, and we'll be nicer to you. We won't treat talent interchangeably. And then along comes Reed Hastings at this New York Times Deal Book conference, the CEO. This is the boss of Ted Sarandos, the boss of all the other people who have to do with making Netflix films and TV shows. And he just starts out basically undercutting every signal, I think, that Netflix has tried to send to the creative community saying, we love and understand you. First of all, by saying that, you know, in terms of having pulled Hasan Minhaj's Patriot Act segment dealing with Saudi Arabia, which was critical of the Crown Prince, MBS, who, you know, is believed by many to have caused the murder of Jamal Khashoggi and who has been criticized on many fronts. He said, you know, in terms of that, that Netflix is, quote, we are not in the truth to power business, we're in the entertainment business. And that it may be how most places feel. I mean, probably Disney secretly in their innermost thoughts, they think, yeah, me too. But to say that out loud and publicly and proudly, I'm sure it's not something that anybody who deals with filmmakers and creative showrunners at Netflix wants to hear.
No, and this might go over well in Redwood City in Northern California, where Netflix is headquartered and all of the digital aspects are based. But in the Hollywood headquarters, where actual movies and TV shows are being made, this is not what you want to be out there as the message to the creative community, because you're saying the exact opposite to them. You're saying, come to Netflix. We will give you full creative control. You want to make a 3.5-hour gangster movie for $160 million and say what you want to say? We will do that. And then you've got Reed Hastings espousing what is likely the real opinions of the company, totally contradicting that. He said a bunch of things of this thing. He defended this new system they've got where they're going to potentially allow consumers to speed up content on Netflix to watch more of it. Creators hate that because they don't want their work screwed around with.
Yeah, I mean, Judd Apatow has been very vocal about this on Twitter, and he's not alone. And I don't think I'm exactly quoting him at all, but the gist of what he is saying is, you know, why don't you take Beethoven's Fifth and just rush that along so you can listen to it faster? And I think that is an argument that appeals to anybody who has put their blood, sweat, and tears into making a movie. And he wasn't done, right? He had another comment about people watching movies in theaters.
Yeah, he basically said that if theaters want to play movies that are on Netflix, be my guest. But what that runs counter to is that the narrative in Hollywood right now from Netflix is for a certain kind of movie, maybe, you know, primarily awards movies, they will give an exclusive window in theaters like they're doing for The Irishman and like they're doing for Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, where you can experience this film exclusively in theaters and then it will go to Netflix. That clearly is not Reed Hastings' preferred method. He's been open about that. But to drop that kind of comment into the middle of the award season and when these films are playing in theaters, not ideal for them.
I mean, Martin Scorsese just wrote an opinion piece in the New York Times defending his argument that the Marvel movies and the superhero movies are not cinema. And a great deal has been made about that. We don't need to go into it. I know what he means. I think people know what he means. They want to kind of pretend they don't, but they do. But at the end, he basically says, you know, yes, I made The Irishman for Netflix because they gave me the money, but would I rather have that thing in theaters? Absolutely, because that's what they do. They all want. And so for Reed Hastings, and I'll read the exact quote, if theaters want to carry Netflix films once they're on Netflix because people want the group experience, that's great. That is honestly patronizing, the way I read it, to people who, you know, you losers who aren't so happy that we're giving this to you right away and want to drag yourself to the theater and pay for the parking and the popcorn and the babysitter. That's great. It doesn't play well in Hollywood either.
No, and going back to the Scorsese op-ed in the New York Times, he specifically mentioned the fact that Netflix was giving him this exclusive theatrical run. And I'm sure that was a big part of the negotiation to get that film is, what are you going to do for me in theaters? And you hear that all over town when Netflix is coming after filmmakers to make their big projects there. It's like, okay, I'll do it for Netflix. You give me the money to do it. And also, I would kind of like a theatrical exclusivity window.
I honestly think Scorsese believed that because he is Martin Scorsese, theater owners and Netflix would work something out. And it didn't turn out that way. Theater owners were like, nope, no dice. We don't care who it is. And that sends a message. You know, Cuarón managed to get a version of a release for Roma. And I think people were like, okay, maybe this can work. But when you see Martin Scorsese not getting it, that does send a message. Let me turn to another awards season issue, since Reed Hastings' comments, as you mentioned, come in the middle of awards season. The Academy has decided to disqualify Nigeria's first ever submission for Oscar. It's called Lionheart. And the reason is because the film is predominantly in English. Now, Nigeria's official language is English. And the Academy has changed the title of this, what was the foreign language category, but they haven't changed the rules. And this has not been met well by certain important filmmakers such as Ava DuVernay.
Yeah, the requirement is that the film be predominantly in a language other than English. And, you know, that's a very broad stroke rule intended to prevent films that should be competing in the other categories from competing in this category. But as you mentioned, the problem is they changed the name of the award from foreign language film to international film. And that seems to suggest they are welcoming of countries like Nigeria submitting the best of the best in their community for consideration for this award. And the best of the best in Nigeria this year, apparently, is an English language film because that's the official language. So what do you do here?
Let me read part of a tweet from Ava DuVernay, which says, are you barring this country from ever competing for Oscar in its official language? Which I think really does underscore the absurdity. And the Academy is standing by this. And I just feel like, guys, give it up. It's a bad look.
Yeah, or change the name of the category back. But just in defense of the Academy, it's a really difficult thing to create a rule that is catch-all for all of these countries' submissions. And, you know, their argument is that Nigeria is free to submit a film that is not in English, just like
not
any
the official
other
language of the country.
Sure. Right. Just like any other country is free to submit a film that is not in English, including countries that primarily speak English, like the UK or like any of these other English speaking territories. That's the rule as they have it.
It feels like a hangover from imperialism that looks bad, in my opinion. And I know the Academy has wrestled over years with this foreign language category and how to define it. And it's constantly controversial. And we'll see if they want to continue to defend this. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. Coming up after a short break, Damon Lindelof explains what happened with his canceled movie, The Hunt, from his perspective. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters.
Every year, a bunch of elites kidnap normal folk like us. Where'd they get you from?
Wyoming.
Mississippi.
Orlando.
And hunt us for sport.
That's a clip from the trailer of the Universal movie The Hunt, produced by horror kingpin Jason Blum. And that trailer is all that's been seen of The Hunt because, Well, it's complicated. First, there was an article in The Hollywood Reporter from my colleague Tatiana Siegel and me about ESPN pulling ads for the movie in the wake of back-to-back mass shootings in California, Texas, and Ohio. After that came Sean Hannity.
Look at this. Universal Pictures set to release a brand new movie about hunting. Yes, irredeemable deplorables for sport. You know, we smelly Trump Walmart voters that cling to our God, guns, religion, and Bibles.
Trump tweets followed, slamming the racists of liberal Hollywood. And then, just days after we published the Hollywood Reporter piece, Universal canceled the film's release altogether. The Hunt was written by Nick Hughes and Damon Lindelof, who, as listeners of the show know, was our guest last week to talk about HBO's Watchmen. You can still listen to that conversation if you missed it, but my work would not have been done without bringing up a sensitive subject. Don't kill me, but I have to ask you about The Hunt, which is the Universal movie that never got released, and I may have had a little something to do with it.
Well, if you're going to ask me about The Hunt, then I think I do have to kill you.
Yeah, Tim. you can kill me.
No, what would you like to ask before I dive into my pre-prepared monologue?
Oh, you know, the discussion of The Hunt was very frustrating as a reporter. Yep. I did reach out to you, and I didn't hear, I heard you were focused on Watchmen.
But you didn't email me, though.
I did. I'll just quickly pause and note that after this interview, I scoured my sent messages for proof that I had actually sent this email. But I must confess, it does not seem to exist. I emailed Lindelof, for real this time, and offered to check myself into a care home. He responded graciously, "I know you wanted to email me, and you thought you did. I am guilty of this on a constant basis, so if you check yourself into a care home, I will have no choice but to be your roomie." That doesn't sound so bad around now, but back to our conversation. I believe, I know you said elsewhere that people should see the movie and that it was not represented properly. And as a reporter, it was really frustrating because it was real. I will blame Universal. They absolutely failed to convey what the movie was, and Jason wouldn't do it. And there was just this kind of fear and hysteria. There was like this weird feeling of flying in pitch black darkness.
Sure.
But, you know, we just started with knowing that ads had been pulled. And then I was told from a very, very good source that there was going to be a broader pulling of ads. Mm-hmm. And then it became inevitable, I think, that they were going to pull the movie.
Right.
But nobody, this was a huge PR fail is what I'm trying to say in short.
So let me start by saying that I think that we have to contextualize what was happening at the time that this PR fail occurred. And first and foremost, and I'm not just saying this because I'm beholden to Universal. I am more than willing to point my finger when I feel like it is appropriate to point it. That said, everybody was in uncharted territory. And the reason that we were in uncharted territory was because of the horrific shootings that happened back to back in El Paso and Dayton. And so
Correct. Everything
that you just said was happening in the midst of—
Yeah, I didn't mean to leave that out.
No, I know. But I'm just saying, oh my God, because up until that point, nobody said— Certainly nobody said to me, it doesn't mean that it wasn't said behind closed doors. Nobody said to me, we're worried about this movie. This movie is going to be problematic.
When the script went around, people were worried.
Yeah, well, and I'm not saying that isn't true, but nobody at Universal, we understood that given what the movie was about, that it was going to be potentially polarizing. But my opinion about polarizing is, since when was that a bad thing? We're
right.
Living in incredibly polarized times, and if you're going to do a political satire, it better be polarizing. At the same time, this movie isn't going to get made if people really feel like it's dangerous. And then when Jason wanted to do it, and then when Universal said, we want to do it too, and that would have been the time that we would start getting these notes of like, well, you got to change this, or this is really dangerous, etc. The thing about the initial reporting, and where I'm speaking very specifically about the Hollywood Reporter story is—
mine.
The most erroneous fact in that story, which is that—
Okay.
Well, maybe perhaps the only one, is that the movie was at one point called Red State, Blue State.
And it never was. Never, ever?
Never,
I don't know where that,
ever.
That was, I mean, I'm not trying to pass a buck. I don't know where that.
And I know that you guys didn't make it up. So that means that one of your sources, and the source in the story was located as a filmmaker who had a relationship with Universal Studios, otherwise known as 10,000 people in Los Angeles.
Right.
Someone who didn't like the fact that the movie The Hunt existed. Maybe they're the ones who gave you Red State, Blue State. But nobody ever fact-checked that, because if they had, they would have realized that that wasn't the fact. And the reason that I mentioned red state, blue state is when Fox News basically took the Hollywood Reporter story and ran their 48th cycle, they kept mentioning the red state, blue state thing and the deplorables thing, which is, yes, The Hunt is a movie that uses the word deplorables. It uses it to comedic effect. It uses it to satirical effect. And when people see how it's used in the movie, I'm pretty confident that no matter what side of the aisle you are on, you will get a kick out of it. I could be wrong about it. That said, once the word deplorables and red state and blue state, that basically created the 48-hour echo chamber that ultimately led to the commander-in-chief tweeting about the movie, and the rest is history. And so that was the part where I felt like, look, I understand right now we're all spinning. The appropriate thing to do, and Universal couldn't have agreed more, Universal led the charge. As soon as those shootings happened, and El Paso happened first, Dayton happened maybe 12 hours later, late Saturday night. There were conversations on Sunday, we have to pull the ads. And I'm not sure whether the reporter story was already being written or whether that was the incentive to start writing the story. But suddenly this movie that was advertising during the debates about had a political ideology where one group of people was hunting another for sport. I understand that that's newsworthy. That I understand that that's a story. And I really wish that I had gotten your email, because I definitely would have talked to you, because every time that you and I have ever spoken, we reach a clearer understanding. And at the very least, I would have, maybe the same series of events would have occurred, but at least a couple of those erroneous facts would not have been reported.
We could have portrayed what the movie was meant to be better. And nobody helped us to do that.
And I also think that, unfortunately, the movie was not finished at the moment this happened. In fact, that Tuesday night, so basically those horrible shootings happened, and I keep saying horrible and horrific because that's really how we were feeling in our bodies, everybody. And when you, particularly when you've made a movie that features gun violence and you are a progressive liberal like I am, I won't say that that is this, you know, I'm not going to speak to Nick and Nick Hughes, my co-writers, or Craig Zobel's political affiliations, but I'm not speaking for them when I say this is where I am. I felt like this sense of horror, but there was a test screening that Tuesday night. And in addition to the decision to pull the advertising, the question was, should we still do this test screening in the Valley? We're going to show the movie to 500 people. Is it even appropriate to have the test screening? And there was a real great meeting of the minds, and everybody came to the consensus opinion of, we should do it, and here's why. Better to show this movie to 500 people 72 hours after these horrible shootings, and if those 500 people say, this movie is not appropriate to show, we're going to pull it. It's not going to exist. It's never going to see the light of day. Maybe it'll be streaming or whatever. Better to know now. And so we're sitting in the Valley that Tuesday afternoon about to do this screening when the Hollywood Reporter story breaks, and we read the story and we get the uh-oh feeling of this is going to be a thing. And then we screen the movie, and the screening goes incredibly well. And I'll let Universal talk about what, it's not my place to disclose what the numbers were, but we had broken through, and the movie screened very well. And afterwards, they have these focus groups where they take 24 people, or in this case, 48 people in two separate groups, and they ask them questions about the movie. And one of the questions that the moderator asked was, do you think that it was appropriate for us to show you this movie given what happened last weekend? And to a person, everyone got offended that they were being asked the question. They were like, it's a movie. And it suddenly made us realize that people who have seen the movie now understand what the movie was trying to do or what the tone of the movie is. And so it's fair for you to say there was a PR failure, but it also evidence that it's a movie that's very difficult to explain to people without feeling like you're taking a defensive position. And so the only real way to have a conversation about the movie is to show it. And I think that this idea of, I fully acknowledge, given what the subject matter of The Hunt is, in the same way that I fully acknowledge what the subject matter of Joker is, that there's a conversation about the hypothetical movie, what we imagine the movie is going to be. And it's sort of like, in advance of the Joker coming out, it's a very reasonable conversation to say, is this a dangerous movie? Now, someone forwarded me a tweet, because I'm not on Twitter.
Or, I heard.
But essentially, somebody tweeted, like, a month ago, we were anticipating that there may be shootings as a result of the Joker, and now we're talking about essentially the gentrification of a stairwell in the Bronx.
Right.
And the broader point being, it's not much ado about nothing, but now that people have actually seen the movie, their reaction to it is to cosplay and dance on stairs to Gary Glitter, and it's not to arm up and go and hurt people.
Although it could take a while for some nutter to do whatever, but you can't prevent that.
Correct. And also two nutters, one of whom tried to assassinate Reagan and another of whom killed John Lennon, had Catcher in the Rye in their back pockets. And does that mean that that people shouldn't read Catcher in the Rye?
Well, some people make that argument, but I'm not one of them.
Okay. Nor I.
Thank God for that. I mean, really, as I understand it, in the movie, if you see the movie, which they still haven't shown it to me, certainly, or offered to.
I have it on my phone. Do you want to watch
sure,
it right
we'll
now?
Sit right
that's
now.
That's a joke. Universal. I do not have
right,
it on my phone.
For you.
And people don't watch movies on your phones.
It's don't, you're meant don't to have speed a, them up.
Have right. a cinematic experience. That's right. what Martin Scorsese wants for you.
Yeah, that's why he made the deal with Netflix. The deplorables in the movie are not the bad guys, and nobody even said that much. And it's not like the elites are good and the deplorables are bad. It's more the other way, as
correct.
I understand it. More the other way.
100%.
But really, let's just say, possibly, that Universal and Comcast, I'm sure they were very much involved in this call, didn't want to go out with a movie about people hunting people in the immediate aftermath of horrific, you know, massacres. Would you have been okay if they said, we're going to hold it, like Universal would say, out of deference to recent tragedies, we are going to take a pause and release this whenever, in March or something?
Would I have been okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I was okay with the decision that they actually made, which
you
is they said that
back.
They were canceling the release. That right. was the word that they used.
Right.
And it wasn't presented to me or Nick or Craig as an option. It was just presented in the same way that when a parents tell a kid, we're not going to Disney World this year, dad lost his job, that the kid can't go, oh yeah, we're going to Disney World. I still really want to go. Jason called us individually and told us this was the decision that was made.
Jason Blum,
yes,
the producer.
Jason Blum, mm-hmm. and it was, of course, really sad and depressing. But at the same time, there wasn't much to be done about it. And I do feel like, for someone who comes from a television culture, the word cancel
sounds permanent.
It sounds permanent, but it isn't. In fact, most of the shows that I love were canceled at one point or another. I think even like The Office, the Steve Carell Office, which is now a bona fide streaming sensation, may have been very close to cancellation. Shows get uncanceled all the time. I mean, Twin Peaks was canceled and yet there was another season of it, et cetera, et cetera. So I understood why that word needed to be used in that context, because I think that saying we've just moved it off of its date because it's insensitive at this time. Unfortunately, we live in a time in our country right now where another mass shooting is inevitable. And so the idea of, if you basically say, we can't release this movie in any proximity to a mass shooting versus we have to pull the movie, we have to reassess our situation, we have to figure out like how we can change the perception around this movie. If we can't change the perception of what the movie is, maybe it's not appropriate to release it at all. And I'm assuming that those conversations are all happening now, that everybody's taking a breath. I mean, this period, the initial release date of the movie was supposed to be at the end of September. I think it was a foregone conclusion, a fait accompli, that we're not just going to push the release date a couple of months or else they would have just done that. So everybody's just taking a breath and sort of figuring out what the answers to those questions are.
So, but it does sound like you understand why they did this.
Of course.
You do.
I mean, I can...
But you blame... I mean, look, it happens.
I don't blame anyone. I feel like, in the wake of these tragedies, let me ask you this. Maybe I'm wrong. Do you believe that The Hunt would have been released on September 21st had those horrible shootings not occurred?
Yes.
Because nobody was having any issues with what the movie was until those shootings occurred.
Although, you know, I know who the source who started this was.
Right.
And it wasn't the first time this had been brought to us as saying, what are they doing? Why are they doing this?
For sure. And it's our job as... it's my job as a storyteller or a producer or as a writer to make content. I don't want to say content and I don't want to say art, but to make stuff that is reflective of the times that we're living in. And I think that there's conventional thinking that I understand, which is don't make a movie political. We're getting enough of that in the real world. But I also sort of said, maybe there's a way to talk about what our political situation is right now through the lens of genre and particularly through the lens of satire. And, you know, when I saw Get Out, that was a game changer for me in terms of the way that it was probably the most profound movie experience that I had relating to race, but it was inside of a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, can you do that with other things other than race?
So that was inspiration?
That
you?
Was the inspiration. And
wow.
Because Jason had made it, when Nick and I first, the very first conversation that we had about The Hunt, when we were first calling it Mannergate, was that we were talking about conspiracy theory gone awry, and this thing Pizzagate had gone out there, which is
right.
Essentially,
Hillary Clinton supposedly running a kiddie porn ring out of a non-existent basement in a pizza parlor, which is insanity.
Correct. Yeah. And a guy showed up with an automatic weapon to liberate the children from the sex dungeon in Comet Ping Pong. Mm-hmm. And so the question became, like, is there any conspiracy theory out there that people wouldn't believe if it subscribed to their fundamental political ideologies? And then what if that conspiracy theory was true? That was the beginning of the idea, but none of that was conveyed in, because maybe we were trying to keep it a secret, or it was tonally too confusing to sort of explain, et cetera, et cetera. But that is what The Hunt is really about, which is what happens when conspiracy theorizing goes to the most absurdist extreme. And what got sold is, this is a movie about liberals hunting conservatives.
Yes.
And I can't wait for you to see the movie legitimately. I don't know if you're going to like it or not, but my hope is that, as obviously my first hope is that it sees the light of day in some way, shape, or form, ideally theatrically, because I've seen how the movie plays with an audience, and I think it's just much more of a fun communal experience. I do know this much, based on the number of times that we've shown it to people, is it doesn't seem to pick a side. It's not saying that there are good people on both sides. It's actually saying there's horrible people on both sides.
Right.
And the hero of the movie is certainly the one person who doesn't profess to have any real political ideology at all. And Betty Gilpin, I can just say she's the star of this movie, is absolutely and totally fantastic. And if nothing else, like, a major star is going to be born out of The Hunt, no matter what political divisiveness arises from it.
Last question. So you asked me if I thought the movie would have been released in the absence of the shootings. Do you think the movie would have been released if we hadn't run our story?
That is a great question. I think, yes, I think the movie would have been released.
Go ahead and kill me then.
I don't know if it would have been released on September 21st. Based on the way that the movie screened that Tuesday night and the fact that the test audience, I think that there were still some marketing questions that needed to be resolved, for sure. You're 100% right about that. And that, again, that's not me saying Universal mismarketed the movie. We're all struggling with how to sell a movie like that.
Right.
In the same way that
and
I'm sure—
And you do know a test screening can be very misleading, because people get to go for free and they don't have to make a decision to go.
Absolutely. And we get them all drunk and— No, I'm joking.
Sort of drunk on a free ticket, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. And I don't believe that the article being written is why the movie release was canceled. I think it's the reaction to the article by the media, by hashtag fake news.
Right.
I can't believe I'm saying
that. Yeah,
but
I can't either.
But I'm sort of like, oh, there's really like a 48-hour news cycle about The Hunt.
There was.
And that's the unfortunate thing. We know this, and I'm not just saying this as a liberal progressive, but when there is a shooting, liberals and progressives want to talk about gun legislation and common sense gun control, and conservatives, and this is a mass generalization, they want to talk about anything other than that. And your article gave them the opportunity to talk about something else.
I'm well aware. Damon Lindelof is the executive producer and showrunner of Watchmen on HBO. He's also the co-writer of the unreleased, as yet, movie The Hunt. Thank you for coming in so much.
I love talking to you. I really do.
Oh, great.
I'm a biz head.
He's a biz
head.
Did I
tell you that? A bizzer?
Yes. We're going to make t-shirts now.
Yeah, I want one.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's show with production assistance from Paul Smith. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.